white eyes lit with everlasting hellfire. Hello, hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Let's Watch Scary Movies. As always, we are your horror hosts. I am Jenny.
And hello, I am Caitlin.
And we are coming to you today from Nottingham in London, and it's a beautiful summer's sunny day.
It is gorgeous. It has been stunning outside. I love summer, but well, I'm sad that it's August. Don't let it end.
No, because, well, you know, we're in Leo season and we're both Leos, so this is
Our time. Your birthday. But that, other than that, no, I'm not ready for it to end.
But yeah,
I will be reunited with my sweet, sweet lover, Jenny, in a few weeks' time when I come for her birthday.
Yeah, it's my birthday 2 weeks today, I think.
And it is Leo season. Yay.
And we are here. We are carrying on. We are into our second week of our 80s summer slasher
extravaganza bonanza.
Yeah, this week we are talking about The Burning from 1981.
Do you know, I'm living for this series because, first of all, I've never seen The Burning, so it's introducing me to new films. And I know we've talked previously about slashers. It is not my favorite subgenre. I don't know if it's yours. Like, how do you feel?
Not my favorite, but it's definitely up. I'd say it's probably top three.
Really? Okay.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to think.
Well, like, you're right. Look at Scream. I mean, we absolutely loved Scream. We rated it really, really highly. Same with Black Christmas. I mean, it can be really good.
Scream, Halloween, they're probably in my top fives.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, obviously, like, Supernatural is my favorite. Do you class Possession as supernatural, or would we do that as a separate?
Because would that be more like religious? You know, it's funny because the subgenre, it's an interesting question. I was texting with my friend Chris, who is an avid listener, and he was kind of, we were talking about 80s slasher movies, and he had brought up Children of the Corn, and I was like, mm-hmm. Well, Children of the Corn to me is not really a slasher. And then we were kind of thinking, so what constitutes a slasher? Like, what exactly? I'm sure there's like rules somewhere that you know of, because this is your forte. But yeah, I mean, is it a singular killer who targets a specific group? Is it like the time period that it takes place over? Because slashers tend to be like short time periods, right? Like, it happens quickly.
Yeah. I mean, for me, a slasher is usually, for the most part, one or two. But, you know, one, if it's multiple killers, we're usually tricked into thinking it's just one, i.e. Scream. But yeah, you have like one villain who is usually given some sort of, it's like kind of silent and menacing. So you've got, you know, The Shape, you've got Jason, you've got Ghostface, even though Ghostface is many people over the franchise, but you know, when you think about it, you think about it as one killer.
Yeah.
And they are usually going after a group of people, or it's one person and the people around them.
Sure.
To me. Yeah. And obviously it's
the form of killing tends to be
slashing.
Yeah, slashing. Stabbing, slashing.
In this case, it's a fantastic set of gardening shears.
I know. Yeah. I was wondering what the weapon of choice was going to be.
So
I mean, I don't know, Children of the Corn to me, not a slasher, but a great film. I still love it, but yeah,
I definitely need to rewatch Children of the Corn. That's the
it
one
just
I
yeah but it just kind of started a really interesting yeah
it I'm would trying be interesting to think what discussion. I would pass. Yeah, I think my top subgenres of horror has to be supernatural, religious possession horror, and folk horror are probably.
Yeah, I love stuff about the devil, but it has to be done right. It's hard to get it right. And that's why when movies get it right, they're so good. Like The Witch, obviously. Yep. The Exorcist, I mean. Yeah, movie. Even what was that M. Night Shyamalan? I think it was M. Night Shyamalan movie in the elevator.
Ooh,
that one. That was a great movie. That was about the devil. I can't remember.
I've seen that.
What? It's great. I can't remember what it's called, but it's, or if it's M. Night Shyamalan.
I'm trying to think of what M. Night Shyamalan. I can't say his name. It's like, it's like banana. It's like banana. You know, sometimes if I'm writing the word banana, you start writing and it's like, when do you stop? It's the same with saying M. Night Shyamalan, because it's like when I start saying it and my brain doesn't know when to stop saying it. So I just, I could just go on for eternity. Shyamalan.
Please don't. Okay, you're not allowed to say it anymore. It was just never ending. So the movie's called Devil.
Okay.
And not what's it devil about? In the elevator, devil in the lift. Hey everyone, there's a devil in the elevator. That's, it's none of those titles. It's called Devil. Anyway, okay. I do recommend it. But yeah, I love that subgenre too. I also really like psychological. I'm watching right now this show on Shudder called The Terror, and it's super interesting, and definitely there are supernatural elements to it. I think you'd really like it. I think you and Andy should watch it. But you know, all of this to say, we are completely digressing away from the fact that it's the 80s summer slasher eleganza, extravaganza, bonanza, and we're watching and talking about the 1981, would you call it a cult classic? But The Burning.
The Burning.
Which I heard of, but had never seen until now.
Yep. So
thank you for introducing this movie, because I enjoyed it.
It's a good one. And it's actually the second time I've watched it in the past month or so, because when we saw it was on Shudder, me and Andy watched it. And then I was like, we've got the summer extravaganza bonanza coming up. So maybe that would be a good one to watch. So then I watched it again to take notes. And yeah, it's really, I really enjoy it. However, it is an incredibly problematic film.
Do you mean in terms of like gender, like equality?
Well, yes. And also who wrote it. This is the first film.
Oh, it's the Weinsteins.
It's the Weinsteins.
Oh, yes.
Harvey Weinstein wrote the story. The screenplay was written by Bob Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein, this is the kind of the film that they used to start Miramax, basically. And this is also where one of the earliest accusations against Harvey Weinstein came from. One of the production crew in this film was assaulted by Harvey Weinstein. And I think when you're watching the film, some of the male characters in particular, I mean,
Or the response to some of the male characters' behavior is not as, you know, strict or worrying to the adults here as it should be. Which, exactly. Speaking of the adults, I was so confused. Well, you know what?
Let's just get into it.
Now it's time for a breakdown.
It's 1981.
Good year.
It's summer. We're at Camp Blackfoot. You've got some kids.
Five boys with gray hair and sweaty faces.
Yes, they do. Five teenage boys, and they're talking, and you hear them say, like, tonight's the night. Cropsy is going to get what he deserves. And they're kind of lurking around, and you get that they're at this camp, and they're playing a prank on an adult. Cropsy is the camp caretaker, and from, you know, all accounts throughout the film, we learn that he is an absolute asshole. He's really, really mean to the kids at the camp. And so these camp kids are going to play a prank. And yet it kind of looks like you've got like four older and one slightly younger boys. And one of them seems a little bit hesitant to pull this prank. But, you know, peer pressure, he goes along with it. And we see them, one of the boys like sneaks into Cropsy's room, and we see Cropsy asleep in his bed. Just ever so slightly sleeping, you know, very relaxed, sleeping in his bed with a can of petrol right beside it, or like gas, which, you know, as you do.
I did write that. I'm like, gasoline can in room,
By bed. Like, not even just in room, but right beside your bed. Yeah, and they have this boy sneaks into the room, and for 1 second you think Cropsy's like woken up, because he seems to like sit up.
They do this like jump scare. I wasn't a huge fan of it, but
no,
fine, okay. So of him kind of like being disturbed in his sleep, and then he sits up really quick, and they have like a music effect, and you're like, oh, and then he lays back down and goes.
Yeah, he doesn't notice the teenage boy in his bedroom.
No, with the box of potato chips.
Yeah, with this like box, and they kind of puts this box down. And they set, like, lights something in the box, and then takes the box away and sneaks back out. And all the boys, they're at the window, and they start like tapping on the window on Cropsey's window. And at first it's just like knocking, but it does get kind of like, if I woke up to that noise, I'd be freaked out. And it's like, oh, they're just pulling this prank, you know, they've done something, they've lit a candle or they've done something to freak him out, and they're knocking on the window. And he wakes up, and it's like this harmless prank goes from like, okay, you snuck into someone's room while they're asleep, that's a bit out of order, to what in the holy fuck is wrong with these kids? Because they've dug up, I mean, there's no other way of doing this. It's a human head. A human head that is like covered in rotting flesh and maggots, and they put candles in its eye sockets, and they've put it on like the table in front of Cropsey's bed. Where did they get a human head from?
I mean, maybe it was a fake and then they added the maggots. I mean, I'm not sure.
I mean, it was very realistic because it was just like all the rotting flesh on it.
There were like a lot, it did bring up a lot of questions here.
Yeah.
So, but, and the other thing is, they seemed pretty, I don't know, unconcerned and blasé that your man catches on fire. He's fully on fire. So basically,
Cropsey freaks out.
He freaks out. He knocks the, it was kind of funny when I rewatched it, but he flails around sort of unnecessarily, but, you know, rightly afraid, knocks the candle onto the bed, which goes up. And then, of course, creeps over to the gasoline can, which then explodes, and then he's on fire, the house is on fire, he runs out, you know, en flambé, and the five kids who played the prank just sort of like, they're kind of like, whoa, oh no.
Oh no. And he like Cropsey like falls and rolls down the hill and goes into the lake.
No one helps him.
And the kids run off. I'm gonna start with right away, may as well get into this now. Like last week's episode, this film, all the special effects were done by Tom Savini, who turned down Friday the 13th Part 2 to do this instead, because when he first did Friday the 13th, it was supposed to be a one-off. And so he did The Burning instead. And you can tell, and you can also tell that in like the year or so, like he's learning so much already. Because if you look at some of the effects from Friday the 13th, and then you compare them to this, which is probably only like a year or so later, already you can start to see like how he's figuring out even better techniques to do things. Cropsey, throughout most of this film, in a lot of the scenes, was actually played by Tom Savini, because the actor they had to play Cropsey couldn't do certain things. And the fire scene, basically he was too scared to do a lot of the stunts and things, so Tom Savini did them. So this scene where he catches on fire.
Really?
Yeah, Tom Savini did it, because he was in charge of the stunt anyway. So yeah, he sets himself on fire and does all the running around, which is probably why you get such a long... The scene lasts a while. Like, you know, normally when you see someone catch on fire in a film, it's like 2 seconds and then they're out.
Yeah.
But like Tom Savini properly took it and he rolls down a hill and he's like flailing and then he's in the pond. So yeah, not dead.
Then you get like a title card that says St. Catherine's Hospital 1 week later. And so you've got this sort of nerdy doctor talking to a nurse, I'm thinking, who's first of all super professional. You know, he's cooked, he's a monster. Like, basically, yeah. The nurse is talking to the new doctor about one of the patients and is describing him as a freak, and he wants to show him this burned patient.
He even refers to him, he's like, they're walking, he's like, want to see something fucked up, and then when he's burned so bad, he's cooked a fucking Big Mac. He's a monster. Yeah. And he says this. I'm like, they really need to work on their bedside manner. Because they say this like right next to him. He's in a tent. You know, Cropsey's in one of these like burn tents. And yeah, the nurse, the male nurse, brings the new doctor in. And he's like, yeah, you've got to see this guy. Like,
well,
it's
like
the most fucked up thing you'll ever see.
Yeah, like most of the talk, they were walking down the hallway. But yeah, then he's literally next to the bedside just talking smack about the patient. So yeah, as I say, super professional.
And then we get jump scare,
arm grabbing the doctor. So
burnt
or
arm,
the nurse
shoots out and grabs the nurse, and the doctor's like, wah, wah. I'm like, yeah, I don't think, no, you wouldn't react like that as a doctor, even as like a new doctor.
Well,
like,
didn't he grab the nurse? It grabs the nurse.
Yeah, he grabs the nurse, but doesn't the doctor like freak out and he's like,
run away.
He does. It's like a patient's just grabbing your arm. Like, what kind of health professional is he?
That arm looked pretty scary. So, yeah. But then you get the opening credits to this. Really, I have to like take a moment because I looked him up for Rick Wakeman, who did the sound, the music score. Just really like synthy, jittery, like loud music. I mean, I thought the sound effects were pretty effective in this film. I was a fan.
Yep.
So then you get 5 years later, and you get this sort of really interesting technique of voices kind of overlapping and filling in the backstory from the last 5 years, like, oh, you're going to have a hard recovery. Like, you can hear the different, like, medical professionals talking about him.
Like,
and
you hear one of them say, like, try not to blame anyone. You know, that's not going to help you. And then another voice saying, I'm sorry the skin grafts didn't take. There's nothing more we can do.
Yeah.
Anger and resentment won't help you.
And it shows him kind of like he can stand, but then he's walking really slowly. And then finally the day comes and they discharge him. And what's the first thing that he does, Jenny? What does he do straight out the gate?
I mean, you've been in a hospital, like, you know, recovering for 5 years from your hideous burns. I know the first thing I'm going to do is get a hooker.
Same.
I'm going to go bang some hoes.
No hesitation whatsoever.
Yeah. So, yeah, you see him. Where is he? Because
I wasn't sure. He was, like, in some sort of red light district somewhere.
Yeah.
I think this film takes place in New York, like upstate New York.
Yeah. I think it's like New Jersey, the camp, I think. But I think this bit's supposed to be in New York. And yeah, you've got all these neon lights, XXX nude shows, things. And so, and you see this woman taking him home. She's a sex worker and she's taking him home. And he's wearing like a long coat and a hat and things.
So I also thought, like, why are you taking him home? That's not safe.
Yeah.
But okay. I liked her. I thought she was kind of a vibe. I liked her.
Yeah.
Dave said that she talked too much.
Oh, well, I think she was cut. She wasn't sober, and she's like going along. Yeah, she's climbing the stairs and she's talking to him. She obviously hasn't seen what he looks like yet, and she gets into the room and she's like, "Are you coming in, honey? Because I'm going in." And as he comes in, he turns the light out, and she's like, "Oh, you want to, you know, dark? That's fine. You know, you're paying." And then she's like, "Aren't you going to take your hat off?" And then it's like, well, you can keep it on if you want to keep your hat on. I've had, you know, clients want to do it wearing all kinds of crazy things. And then he obviously takes his hat off and you get this amazing kind of shot. You only see her and she's like stood looking. And all of a sudden she just looks really sad. And she starts like almost like crying a little bit. She's like, please just leave. Like, I don't want, you know, she's obviously seen what he looks like. And he grabs her by the throat and picks up a pair of like scissors by her bed and stabs her to death.
Already
we have, you know, violence towards sex workers.
Yes. Oh, and then he pushes her like kind of out the window.
He like pushes her out the window. Yeah.
It's a hard scene to watch. I personally was a little, maybe I should have expected it, but I was a little surprised that that was his first reaction, but maybe it was her reaction to him.
Yeah, that's what I think. I was like, oh, maybe he was just going, you know, to have sex with her, and then her reaction has caused him to tip over the edge.
Yeah.
And then we go to Camp Stonewater. What I like about this is in how many, especially if you look at the Friday the 13th franchise at the summer, you know, Camp Crystal Lake, there's never any kids there ever. It's only just the counselors. This film, straight up, we've got the kids there.
Yeah.
And this is a very uncomfortable scene because we're at Camp Stonewater and it's a scene of all the camp kids and some of the counselors playing. Are they playing like baseball, I think?
Yes.
Yeah.
They're playing baseball. I wrote no bras, no pants.
Yeah.
What's going on, girls?
Yeah. So there's all these girls running around. There's lots of gratuitous shots of girls running, with no bras on and in bikini bottoms. And what you have to remember is that these are supposed to be high school kids. There's only like two people in this film that are the counselors, pretty much. And that is Todd and his girlfriend.
I think she's called Megan, maybe.
Or Karen.
Or Michelle. Or.
I remembered the names better in this one.
No, me too, like, because you want to know why? There's more realistic dialogue, more character development. You care more about them. Like, this film succeeds in 1,000 ways where Friday the 13th was really left wanting, in my opinion. But one thing a quibble that I have with this film that I struggle is who's who. Who are the counselors and who are the kids? Because, you know, you do have high schooler kids and like older campers, I suppose you'd call them. But yeah, I wasn't sure. Like, who's in charge here? Who is in charge of all these kids?
We only see one actual adult, twice actually. We see him twice.
With the guy talking into the microphone.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. But Todd is meant to be some sort of authority figure, as is
he's
Michelle.
One of the
But I did not think it was clear. And I spent too much time wondering what the hierarchy is here. And you shouldn't have to do that. But that's a very small complaint. But I will also say that the casting was good in the sense that you get a young George Costanza, a young Holly Hunter, I think, is in this as well.
Yes, she is. Very, very, very briefly.
Very briefly. But I recognized one her little accent. I was like, oh, I hear that little Holly Hunter accent.
Yep.
But yeah, so back to this baseball game. Yeah, I mean, I understand that they're horny teens. This is another recurring theme in the 80s slasher genre. And they're flirting and joking around. And this is, I feel like a lot of that was captured really realistically in this film.
Yeah, I think my issue with this scene was we weren't, to begin with, especially with the girl running, we weren't looking at her through the eyes of, you know, horny teenage boys. We were looking at it, that was our view, that was our gaze, that was looking at this, like, you know, probably like 16-year-old girl running with no bra on. And then you have this close-up of one of the girls and she's in like bikini bottoms.
It's just a shot of her ass.
And this is where we have like two guys being creeps, basically. One of them, Eddie, is talking to, I forgot the other guy's name, the kind of the muscly guy. And he's like, oh, I want it. I want that ass. I want it. And the other guy's like, no, it's out of your league. And Eddie just walks up to her. I think it's Karen, the girl in the bikini bottoms. And he's like, hey, Karen, I want you in my bedroom by 8:30 tonight. Oh, no. He's like, what are you doing tonight? And she's like, who's asking? And he's like, I want you in my bedroom tonight by 8:30. And she's just like, maybe. Yeah. So already this guy, Eddie, is giving me the creeps.
Oh, he's like the worst one for sure. But yeah, I think
Alfred's the worst one.
I think Eddie's worse because of the scene in the water with Karen. I think it's Karen.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, they're probably on par with each other, but yeah, they're creeps.
I think Eddie's worse, but it's the entitlement to her body.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that in this film for sure. Yes. I mean, I think with any 80s kind of, again, like slasher series where sort of campy sexuality is kind of a part of it, there are ways that you can handle it, but it was the 80s. And this is exactly what the mentality was. Men have entitlement to women's bodies. Yeah. And a lot of this is filmed very much through the male gaze, for sure.
Yes, very, very much so. So one of the girls playing baseball, the ball goes into the woods and she goes in and we kind of suddenly see these like shears behind her. And she doesn't seem to notice that there's anyone there with her. And we have the classic slasher point of view shot with the heartbeat synth over the top, creating tension, and she's trying to find the ball, and she hasn't noticed that there's a guy there with a big pair of garden shears about to stab her, and just at the last second, she finds the ball, and she leaves, and nobody gets stabbed.
I was just like, for fuck's sake, get another baseball, it's gone.
Even people are shouting like, oh, well, let's use another ball, and she's like, no, I want this one. I don't know. Find ball just in time.
I also think her name is Tiger, but yeah, it was a little bit of...
I think her name's Tiger as well.
I sort of wish my name was Tiger, but then also I thought, why is your name Tiger?
Yeah.
But I it was sort of a tense moment, you know, I'll give it that. So then you kind of cut to a scene of the girls in the cafeteria eating, right?
Yeah.
In my notes, yeah.
Yeah.
But then after that, my note is prolonged hair washing with tits.
Yes. But we have this like conversation between a couple of the girls in the canteen where Karen, the one who's... Eddie was like, I want you in my room.
Yeah.
She's talking to one of her friends and her friend's like, oh, I saw Eddie talking to you. What did you want? And they're kind of giggling a bit about it. And then she's like, I like him, but I'm also scared of him. And I'm like, is that how they think we work? Oh, I'm attracted to you, but I'm scared of you. Oh, I don't know. And she says at this point she's like, oh, I that's why I didn't want to go on the overnight. So we know that there's an overnight trip coming up. And she says, such and such, whoever the guy is who runs the camp has said, if it gets too much, I can come back to camp. So yeah, early next morning, one of the girls wakes up. I think this is Sally. And she goes into the girl's showers. And they're like open air showers, for one thing. Like she's washing her hair and it's like, you can see the trees above her. I'm like, yeah, that would be rubbish if it rains.
It's an outdoor shower. I mean, yeah, there are sort of partitions, like wooden partition, so there is some privacy, but yeah, it's this very, again, excessively long scene of her washing her hair,
especially again, she's a camper, which means that she's, you know, probably like 17. She's not in college. She's one of the campers.
Yeah.
So yes. She's probably a high schooler.
I didn't even think about that. I don't know why. I just assumed that because her, she's got to be 18. Like, I don't know.
The actress was probably like over 18, but the fact is that she's depicting a camper. And as far as I'm aware, you don't, you know, you only go to camp while you're in high school.
I mean, unless you become a counselor. Yeah. And so she wasn't a counselor.
No, okay. She wasn't a counselor.
Well, it's a very, very long scene and you get a lot of TNA here basically in this movie. I thought it went on for so long, and like, I don't mind, I don't care, like, bit of nudity here and there, not a problem. Obviously the age issue, I wasn't thinking about that. That's so true. But yeah, even I felt like it was so long.
Yeah.
It was just for so long.
That's why. And every now and then she stops,
she hears a noise, she hears something, and then eventually like, and then she screams
something,
find out that basically there's a boy snooping around the showers who's Alfred. And then you have this kind of showdown between Todd, who seems to be in charge of the male counselors, and I believe she's called Michelle, and who is the only one who talks any sense in this whole film. Can I just say that?
Her and Todd, as far as I are the only two that I know for sure.
Yeah, okay. But at this point in the film, I was still confused. Like, I thought the girl... Yeah. Actually, yeah, I did think the girl who was showering was also a counselor. Maybe because they showed her tits. I just assumed that she was an adult. But anyway, so she wants him out. Michelle, the female counselor, she wants him out. And Todd kind of defends him, like saying like he has no friends and he was bullied and he was trying to get back at them. Like what, by going through the girl? Like,
so basically, what he was trying to say. So like, Michelle's saying to Todd, like, I want him gone. Like, he's, you know, it's not safe having him here. He's like perving on the girls and whatever, which is very, very right. And Todd's like, look, let me talk to him. I'll handle it. And when he's talking, and so Todd's like, Alfred, I did you like a solid by not calling you out in front of everyone back there. Like, what are you doing? Why were you doing? Why were you sneaking up? And he's like, oh, I was only trying to scare her. I was trying to scare Sally. And he's like, well, why? Oh, to get back at Glazer. Because Glazer's bullying me.
What a name. Yeah.
Glazer. So I don't understand how, like, perving on some girl who isn't even really Glazer's girlfriend.
It's all fucking bullshit. I mean, Alfred sucks. Like, he sucks. I just think the other guy sucks worse. But I mean, I just was like, I wrote in my notes, okay, we believe you.
Yeah.
So he says, like, Sally is his girl. He's got this really, like, New York kind of Jersey accent.
This is also where we get the first thing where Todd's, like, talking to him, to Alfred. And he's like, look, Alfred's saying that, you know, he hasn't got any friends. Everybody hates being here. And Todd's like, oh, 5 years ago when I was at camp, I didn't just get like called out by, you know, I just didn't get in trouble. I got sent home. So this is the first thing that we're like, oh, 5 years ago. Okay.
That was him.
That was
obviously
him.
Part of that prank.
He was part of it. So he did get into some trouble for what happened. But he's apparently wants to go back to camp. And then we go into the girls' like dorm room. And I love the fact that, again, you've got these high school girls and they're all just like, Tiger looks about 14, 15, and she's just there with a cigarette. They're all just like smoking in this room and they're talking. And I think Michelle's like, oh, well, oh, they're talking about Alfred. And they were saying about how, oh, you know, he's going to come on he's coming on the overnight too. Like, oh, two nights with Alfred, Sally. And then someone's like, oh, I'd rather have Alfred than Glazer. And then they're all like, ew, imagine having Glazer on top of you, like all those muscles.
All his muscles.
And we haven't met Glazer at this point. So I'm like, who the fuck is Glazer? I think Sally's like, oh, why are you so down on Glazer? And then you meet Glazer and that's like instantly like, well, that's why everyone's down on Glazer.
Yeah, he sucks.
He sucks. He stood outside. Alfred walks by and so we meet Glazer. He's a bad boy. He's wearing a vest. He's basically like Nelson Muntz from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
He wears a vest, he's angry all the time.
Yeah.
He's a bit dumb. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Glazer's like having a go at Alfred, like, keep your eyes off my girl, that kind of thing. And then we get down to the lake and all the girls are out on this platform.
It's like a floating dock. It's a floating
dock. Little floating dock. They're all out sunbathing on there.
But can I just say, this camp looks fun. They made it look like a real camp with real kids, like having a good time playing in the water. You know, again, I haven't been to camp, but in my mind. this is what it looks like. And so it looks fun. And so it's just a little bit more believable. And even just that setting makes you care just that little bit much more about the characters and stuff like that, which again was really missing for me in Friday the 13th, for example.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, so Glazer pushes in Alfred, and then Glazer swims, and the guys kind of help Alfred out of the water. Yeah, so we meet
like Woodstock and
George Costanza. That's what I call him.
Yeah. So we meet some of the other, like three of the other boys, and they rescue Alfred because he can't swim very well. And then Glazer like swims out to the platform, and he's like there, like basically in his
strutting around. He pulls like bathing suit bottoms up really high.
Really
struggling this. For context, I watched this film with Dave, who's visiting me from America and also loves horror films. So he was taking notes throughout, which are pretty hilarious. So yeah, we'll get a snippet of Dave's review later on.
But I can imagine Dave was quite interested in
But he said, he's like, why is he pulled up his bathing suit like that? He's like, I can't handle it. But yeah, I just wrote frivolity ensues, basically.
Yeah, like, so basically like the boys, one of them has a pea shooter and they're like, Alfred, let's get back at Glazer. And they shoot him like right in his ass. With the pea shooter. It's not even a pea shooter. It's a fucking like BB gun or something. It's a proper little pistol.
But the thing is about scenes like this, to me in horror films, it's really important because it creates a little bit of, you know, a contrast between like this really heavy, dense, more what's meant to be like dense, scary scenes versus like life at the camp. And I think that you do need to break that up sometimes. It's just makes for better viewing overall.
Yeah. But yeah, I love this bit because like they shoot him in the ass and he's like staring at them. And while he's shouting at them back on land, one of the girls gets up and just pushes him into the lake.
No, it looked like it was a great scene.
It was a great scene.
Then it cuts to the boys. They're hanging out. Boy time.
Yeah. What's his face?
George Costanza.
Costanza. He's like obviously the guy that can get anything. Apparently, just condoms and porn.
Yeah, he gets some contraband and he brings it in.
And I love the fact that like he gives it to the one guy and he's like, oh yeah, that's the world phantom weight jerk off champion. And he just likes jerking off. That's what he likes to do. And while they're talking about this, Alfred looks up and he like freaks out because he's like, I can see someone in the window. So it sees like a face, and you see Cropsy's face in the window for like a flash.
Yeah.
So we're like, oh, there's like some sort of weird bald burn monster thing. And yeah, you see like a flash of it. But then everyone's looking and they're like, no, we can't see anything. And then they go into the mess hall where everyone's eating, and George Costanza's like, oh, saying to the girls like, can I get you guys anything, maybe some spermicide. Gross,
what a class act.
Anyway,
transpires that Woodstock, who's this kind of skinny kid, find out, I can't think of his name at the moment, but he's been in a million films including Only You, which is my all-time favorite rom-com. He plays Bonnie Hunt's brother. Anyway, so he that's Woodstock. No, he's been in so many things. If you look him up, he's like that guy who's been in everything, but you can't think of his name. So he needs some vitamin E. Very important.
Yeah.
So he's got to go back and get his vitamin E. So he makes this little solo sojourn back to the empty cabin with a flashlight, because there's no lights apparently, to look for his vitamin E. And I very much in my notes was like, is he going to die first? I had the feeling maybe he's going to die first. But
maybe this Tony, is where we...
Tony Malam, our director, likes to trick us. You get a lot of point of view shots and scary music, and then it's just Todd.
Yeah, basically Todd goes to the mess hall and he's like, oh, where's Woodstock? And they're like, oh, he's feeling poorly, he's gone back, he's not feeling very well. That's what Glazer says. So like Todd goes to check on him, and yeah, it's fine, he's just jerking off, I think, because they look very sheepish when they come back. And Todd's like, says to Glazer and one of the other guys, you know, you pull anything like that again and you're out of here.
Yeah.
And this is where we see one of the only real shots of the guy in charge, the only real adult. And he's like, hey kids, so some of you older kids are taking a 3-day canoe trip. Make sure, you know, you're going to be away from home, and make sure that there's one good swimmer in each canoe. And it's like, I'm sorry, if my kid's going on a fucking 3-day canoe trip away from the camp, I want them to be good swimmers. You don't want just one good swimmer in each boat.
It was pretty lax, the whole thing. I mean, even like, again, I was having trouble discerning who was in charge other than the guy with the microphone. And clearly he's not going on the trip. So
no.
Are Todd and the other girl, they're the main counselors. They're the ones who are in charge. Okay, so anyway, next day they leave. They go off for this fabulous 3-day canoe trip. Everyone,
and we get like in Friday the 13th, we get a bit of hillbilly music while they're
have a bit of Dukes of Hazzard hillbilly music. It just shows we're having a good time, guys. We're just
I just got written down canoe shenanigans are afoot.
I wrote paddle fight in canoes.
Yeah, they're like splashing each other and.
Until a canoe sinks, and then the music ends. The fun has stopped. And then it cuts to the scary story at the campfire that Todd is telling. And I actually really liked this part because it's just very, I don't know, if you think about sleepaway camp, you've got to have a scary story around the fire. It's just,
you do. The one thing I find a little bit strange is basically he's talking about the
Cropsey.
He's like, it was a camp across the lake. Nobody goes there anymore. It burnt down. And he basically tells the story about how, Cropsey was the caretaker of this camp and he was a real asshole. And he used to drink like 2 bottles of whiskey a day. And he was really used to like scaring the kids and things. And so, but I'm like, dude, you're telling a ghost story about a guy that you basically attempted to murder. Like, you were the one that did this. Surely you would tell a different story.
You ruined his life completely.
Yeah, like, you put a guy in hospital for 5 years. You should be happy you're not in jail, let alone sat around making, you know, a fun ghost story out of it. It just seemed an odd choice. Like, I don't think any real human would do that.
Well, I mean, I don't know how much you know about the sort of the backstory of the film. You probably know loads, but obviously, like, it started off as the Weinsteins wanted to make a film about this kind of urban legend about Cropsey that had been going around New York for a really long time. And in fact, there are, I think, at least one, if not two, documentaries about
there Cropsey. There are about Cropsey.
I watched one a few years back. Yeah, and it was creepy. So so maybe. It is strange that it's him telling the story. And I think in some ways they wanted to make it about Cropsey, and I think they could have done better by telling a different story. But okay, they wanted to work in some of those elements of like the urban legend, you know, like the gardening shears. That's where the part about the gardening shears came from. And, but sometimes it feels almost like an imposition, like they're imposing it a little bit. They could have just taken this version of it or this adaptation of it rather than make it so
or had somebody else telling the story and having Todd looking a bit uncomfortable with
exactly it. That would be a really easy solution,
but having Todd tell the story was a little bit odd. But so then we go to Eddie and Sally, and they're kind of off somewhere. Oh, not Eddie and Sally. That's
Eddie and Karen. They're in the forest, and again, you're kind of getting these creepy point of view shots of them and the music, and they're kind of like flirting and
So he's basically trying to get her to fuck him, and she's like, I thought you liked me, and she's like, I do like you, Eddie, but you're always talking about how many women you've had. I don't want to just be another statistic. And he's like, it's not like that. He's like, when two people like each other, they do it. That's just what happens. Like, and I like you. And it's really creepy. And basically she's like, no, I'm not sleeping with you. So then he's like, fine, let's just go for a swim. And she's like, I haven't got my bathing suit. And he's like, you don't need it. So he gets naked and gets in the water. And she's not sure. And I feel like she does go in willingly into the water, but I think she's definitely feeling a bit of pressure from him to get in the water. But all she wants to do is swim. And
well, I think I kind of got the feeling like she likes him. Like,
she does like him.
It's flirting. Let me get in the water. Let me like make out with you a little bit.
Yeah. But
he gets rapey and he gets forceful and she has to push him away. And
then he shouts at her. Basically, he's like, so basically, he gets all handsy. He gets kind of rapey in the water and she won't sleep with him. She pushes him away. And so he like shoves her, like splashes her and tells her to get the fuck out of his face. Which, is fucking horrific. So she swims back to the shore and her clothes are gone and she's obviously really upset. She's like, guys, like crying almost, like begging.
Well, I do think it's worth noting really quick, just to interrupt you. When she got in the water, there was a shot of her shoes and like her clothes kind of folded neatly like on top of her shoes. So when she comes back out of the water, her shoes are there, but none of the clothes.
Yeah. And then you kind of see like shots of them like strewn in the trees.
Left in the bushes, like strewn all around the area.
And she's really upset.
She's scared of Eddie. She doesn't want to ask him for help, obviously, because he's a cunt and like she's intimidated by him. So I found this scene very like distressing.
Yeah, I did.
So,
And we get this kind of view of her, this point of view from Cropsey of watching her upset, walking through the woods. And she's like really, you can just hear how distressed she is, because she's like, guys, please, no, like, please give me my clothes. Where's my clothes?
What's
thinking
going
that,
on? Yeah.
Thinking that someone's pulling a joke, like pulling a prank on her, and she's already upset. And it's Cropsey, and he stabs.
And he stabs her with gardening shears. And I wrote, yes, finally a death, because I do think it's really interesting that it took this long.
A long time,
obviously, like, the beginning is upsetting, but no one actually, like, the hooker scene, you know, like, she dies. And so that's, you know, but we've been at the camp quite a long time now. So
yeah.
You get a death. And also, I thought it was interesting that the virgin goes first.
Yeah. For she's being punished for turning down sex, essentially. If she'd fucked him in the water, she would still be alive. Yeah.
Interesting take, but
we go to the morning.
So it's the next morning, and Eddie is woken up by Ted and Michelle. And again, I really like Michelle. She's the only one who, you know, sees the severity of the situation. And they start to kind of blame Karen, because the canoes have all been
released. Todd and Karen wake up Eddie, and they're like, we can't find Karen. And he's like, a bit arsy about it. And then eventually he explains, Michelle's like, we know Karen was with you last night. And he says, look, we had a fight, and then she left. I thought she'd come back to camp, but obviously he just slept on the outskirts. And then one of the kids shouts, and the kid's like, all the canoes are gone. And yeah, like, Todd and Eddie and Karen and Michelle are like, what the fuck? And then Michelle's like, oh, well, what's his face? The only real adult at the camp said if things got too much, Karen could go back to camp. And they're like, but she wouldn't have taken like all five canoes. And then they kind of come up with the idea that maybe in the nighttime, and you know, she was distressed, she took untied a canoe and the rest of them have drifted off. So they're like, right, okay, can you get all the kids together,
we're gonna build a raft really quick out of twigs.
And they build, I mean, I think the raft is one of the best characters in this film, because
it's robust, it's sturdy.
it seems to, they build it really quickly, and amazing paddles, like woven paddles. Like,
and then the best part of all, they send the kids off to get help. No counselors go.
No counselors go. They send, and to me, it's like they send the most athletic of the children.
Well, they send Eddie, Woodstock. He's very athletic.
Yeah, they send Woodstock. They send, what's his name? Thingy Costanzo.
Eddie, George Costanza, Woodstock. Yep. So that. A couple girls, they all pile on to this very good raft.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed.
Like 10 out of 10 on raft building skills.
10 out of 10. So they get on this raft and they go looking. Well, no, they're going back to get help, right?
Yeah.
But
as
they're on their way, they see one of the canoes and they're like, oh, look, a canoe. Let's go over there. This is one of my favorite scenes. Because in my mind, I'm like, what's in that fucking canoe? And in my mind, I'm thinking they're going to find Karen. Like,
that's
Karen.
Yes, that's exactly what I thought.
So I'm like, oh God, it's her body and they're going to find it. And so they're, it's better than that, really. So they row over to the canoe, and the killer, basically, Cropsey, is in the canoe, jumps out and kills them all in this, like,
in this amazing, how, first of all, have you ever tried to stand up in a canoe quickly? Because this dude just goes from like lying down, obviously flat, to standing upright in, like, he like, literally jumps onto his feet, has his garden shears. He cuts off, I love the fact he cuts off the fingers of the phantom lightweight jerk-off champion. So no more jerking off for him, even if he did survive. Yep. And he slaughters them all. And not one of them, like, just jumps into the lake and swims away. No.
I mean, I did think that too, but the way that it was filmed, it was like a frenzy almost.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, he killed them all. It was so fast. Like, they would scream, like, in surprise, and then boom, they were dead. I just literally wrote in my notes, wow, that was great. It really was. It was a great scene. Great scene. Like, you just I just didn't see it coming. I should have, but I didn't.
I really thought it was going to be Karen's body.
Yeah. So then you kind of cut to this scene between Ted and Michelle, and they're having a little, like, romantic stroll, a little bit of romantic overtures happening here.
Mm-hmm.
Sally and Glazer bang.
Oh, the most disappointing sex ever.
I love it. She's like, is that it?
Yeah.
Girl, so you have no idea.
At first, it sounds like she's in pain, and she's like, oh, careful. So I think he's having problems, like, finding, I don't think he knows women's bodies particularly well. I think he's, like, ramming against a wall a little bit because the noises she's making. And then, like, it finally seems to be happening, and it is literally, like, three pumps and done. she's just like, oh, is that it? And he's like, oh, I'm really sorry. Like, next time will be better. And especially because he'd been like bigging it up, like, oh, it's gonna be amazing.
$5 for every time I heard that, I swear.
Yeah, me too. We'll be rich.
They're rich.
But then I love it because but then you see kind of like the soft side of Glazer, because obviously he has this kind of like hard man macho thing. But when she says that he's a bit like, oh, I bet you want to go back to camp now. And she's like, no. And he's like, oh, really? Really? He obviously does really like her. I think he does really like her, but he is a stupid boy and doesn't know how to deal with his emotions, I guess. But yeah, he does show a bit of tenderness and he's like, oh, you're cold. And then she's like, well, you didn't do much to warm me up.
Savage.
Burn. Savage. Savage Sally.
I love it.
And she's like, well, look, Glaze is like, well, you stay here, like in the sleeping bag. I'm going to go sneak back to camp and steal some matches and I'll light us a big fire. And she's like, yeah, okay. And then obviously you hear that I'm coming right back. And I've just written down, oh, is poor Sally destined to never have decent sex?
Wow. You really were thinking of the long game here.
Yeah,
You're right. Wow.
Poor Sally. Sally.
Jeez.
Can you imagine? As we kind of go back, and do we actually see Cropsy kill Sally? We do, don't we?
You don't see him kill her. They're kind of like, so basically the killer finds Sally and she grapples with him. And I was kind of like, yeah, Sally, get in there, girl. Like she's got her arms up, like preventing him.
Yes.
And
that's
where the scene cuts. So then you've got, you know, then it cuts to Glazer like stealing. Wooden matches, which, by the way, Alfred spots him and follows him. But he gathers the wood and comes back and he sees Sally like lying there, but she's covered. And so he's like, oh, like, I think he thinks she's asleep. And then
she's in the sleeping bag.
Yeah. And then he pulls back the covers and she's dead. And then the killer comes and kills Glazer and Alfred witnesses the whole thing.
Yeah. But it's like Cropsy's hiding in the sleeping bag, essentially, with Sally. Because it's like he kind of pulls it back a little bit. And first of all, do you not notice that there's like two bodies in there? Because, you know, it's fairly difficult to disguise that. And then she pulls it back a little bit and you kind of see her face. And I'm like, and he's just looking at her for a second. And then all of a sudden, like Cropsy has him up. Like he stabs him like through. Does he like stab him like through the neck or through the chest? Lifts him up into a tree. But essentially,
it's weird because he was lying next to Sally, so surprises Glazer, and then in the next second is up, like killing him. So I thought the editing on that one was a little questionable. Like it wasn't a very smooth transition, and you did kind of wonder. But you know, that suspension of disbelief, like whatever, you don't really care. I mean, in that moment. So yeah. So basically, Alfred runs to go get Ted. He's like shouting for Ted, and Todd.
We're doing so well at remembering these names. We're getting better.
Do you know, but as I say, this film made it easier. So there's that.
Yeah.
But I don't know why I've written Ted in my notes. I know it's not Ted. Other times I've written Todd. Who knows? Anyway, the slasher I wrote here slashes Ted. He passes.
So yeah, Alfred runs back and wakes up Todd and he's like, Todd, they're dead. They're dead. And I think Todd just thinks it's another practical joke. And he's like, no, come on. But he does follow him and Cropsy hits like basically like pistol whips him with the shears. So you think Todd goes down and Alfred runs off.
Yeah.
So you think that Todd's dead, but he's not. He wakes up a few minutes later and he's like, you know, stumbling around a little bit. And during this time we have Michelle with the kids on the dock and they look up and they see the raft coming back and they're a bit confused. Like, why is the raft there? Like, why have they come back in the raft? And then they kind of think, oh, like one of the guys even says something like, oh, don't forget, you've got the Chuckle Brothers or the Ringling Brothers out there. Don't forget, it's probably a practical joke. So all the kids are going to swim out. And Michelle's like, no, let me go. So Michelle like jumps into the lake or the river or whatever and starts swimming towards the raft. And during this point, we also have Todd coming up to the water. So I think Todd, obviously, the only one at this point aware that there's anything wrong. Alfred's just running in the woods, running away from Cropsy.
Yeah.
And just as Michelle gets close to the raft, the boy, like whoever the boy is left on the older boy with the younger kids on the shore, and Todd, he's on the other side, they kind of like realize something's wrong. And that's when Michelle goes to like grab the raft and just a severed arm falls off.
Oh my god. And she essentially discovers just a raft of dead people.
I mean, dead kids.
Yeah, it was yeah. really
and one of the kids, I think it's like Woodstock, like pops up from underneath.
Oh my god. Dragged. Yeah, that was great.
And yeah. And then I love this next scene because you have, it's really realistic. You go and all the kids are like sat on the shore, like screaming and crying and holding each other and saying, we're going to die. Like they are genuinely distressed, which is what you would expect.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So then they're kind of like, right, okay, we need to get out of here. So they obviously just have to tip all the bodies off the raft.
I know. I thought about this because Michelle takes the campers basically
on the raft.
Yeah.
Todd refuses to go because Alfred's still missing. So Todd's like, I need to stay and find Alfred.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I thought was quite honourable of him. So yeah, Michelle's got the kids on the raft and is taking them back. And Todd's off looking for Alfred. Alfred's running through the woods. You kind of see him being chased by Cropsy. You get some cool shots of them, like Alfred's like hiding under this, like it's like rock little cliff face.
And you get that sort of point of view from the killer.
Like, yeah, Crops is above him, and you think he's just going to drop the shears down and like go through the top of his head, but he doesn't. So while this is happening, you know, we get this, and we get shots of Todd running through the woods calling for Alfred, and Alfred hiding from Cropsy. We see Michelle and the kids, and they get back to camp. And
did you not feel like they got back to camp like really quickly?
Yeah, they did.
Tittering. They were like, poop, we're there.
Yeah.
But this is, it's also a nice relief to watch her doing all the things that you feel like you would do in that situation. Yeah. Like she immediately goes and gets help.
Exactly. She immediately goes. And even you have a quick scene on the raft where the kids are like crying, saying they can't do anymore. And she's like, yes, you can. We have to get back. Like, come on, dig it. Like, just you have to dig in and just get this done.
Yes.
And she runs off and she's like, oh, where's the phone or something? And he's like, what do you want that for?
The like super leader guy, basically.
And at first he's like, what? And she's like, there's a killer out there, everybody's dead. And he thinks that they're joking. Until she's like, look at those kids.
Yeah.
And he sees all like these traumatized kids coming off the raft, like holding each other, and he runs off with her. And then we have a scene of like basically then this guy, the camp owner, whatever, the only actual adult, and Michelle are now in like a little boat,
the world's slowest motorboat.
Yeah. And she's even like, won't this go any faster? And he's like, no, it's as fast as it goes.
Motoring
and
along very slow.
Like, when are the police going to get there? And she called the police to come by helicopter. I'm hoping they're there already.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that we kind of know that at least help is on the way. We find, so it looks like Alfred's ended up, I thought he'd ended up back at the old camp that burned down. I'm not sure.
I wrote, why are they in Mayan ruins?
Well, so at first I thought it was, yeah, I thought they'd found it, because he's like, oh, the bird, you know, Camp Blackfoot was across the lake. So I was like, oh, have they ended up back at the old camp? Because everything looks like ruined and burned and things. But then something I read somewhere said it was a mine, that they just came across this old abandoned mine. So I'm like, is it, are they pretending it's the camp? Or I don't know. Anyway, it's this old, burnt, abandoned, ruined place.
Yeah.
Todd's got an axe, which I'm like, thank fuck, someone's actually thought about picking up a weapon.
Yeah.
And so he's got an axe and he's running. Cropsy now has some sort of flamethrower.
That's what I wrote. I'm like, killer has a flamethrower. Also, why are they in a mining cave? Like, I was very confused about the environment that they were in, because they were struggling, fighting, you know, because the killer was kind of torturing Alfred. I'm not really sure he had him.
So,
kind of,
rather than just killing him, yeah, I think basically he's realized that this one of the campers is one of the, I presume he realizes that Todd is one of the campers that, you know, burnt him alive. But I'm not sure how he would know, to be honest. So
I thought about that too. Like, why this camp? Why this time? Did he target it because he knew Ted was there? Is he coming for the rest of them? Like, what?
Yeah.
You know, why specifically Ted? Even at the beginning with five boys, I thought, oh, there's five of them doing this prank because eventually they're gonna, you know, meet their end from Cropsy's revenge. And then none of them come into play later in the film.
Yeah, we only see Todd. So
So
Todd's looking for Alfred. Cropsy's got hold of Alfred, and yeah, he kind of has him like tied up, and he has the shears like on his neck, but not much. I couldn't really figure it out, because you finally get to see Cropsy's face.
I wrote that as well, and I checked the time, and it was 6 minutes from the end of the film, and I thought, again, super clever, well done.
Yeah.
You know, you never show the full monster. And I thought they did it so well, because you kind of get flashes, like the arm in the beginning or the face at the window. So you're not completely left wanting. But yeah, when you do finally see him in all of his glory.
It is.
It's disturbing and
he's fucked up.
Yeah, and effective. So you've got these. So Ted realizes his reckoning has come. They have these really effective flashbacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did write the killer has a flamethrower. Like,
yeah, I've got like, you get now, that? I'm like, now he has a flamethrower.
Amazing.
But yeah, but so yes. He's coming after Todd basically.
And they battle. It's like a Todd and Cropsy battle, you know, to the death. And it takes the kill shot. Like he.
But the thing is though, Alfred gets involved. Alfred suddenly realizes that maybe he's not as incapacitated as he thought because he stabs Cropsy with the shears.
Yes.
And you think he's gone down. And, you know, they make that mistake where, you know, they just assume that the killer is dead. And just as they're starting to leave, he jumps back up. And yeah, Todd axes him in the head and then he catches fire and burns. So my last note from this film is, so he's now twice baked.
Yep. This Cropsy story continues. I don't know what I meant by that note, but I'm getting he burned at the beginning, he burned at the end.
So. Yeah, so and you have this amazing, very long shot of Cropsy basically axed to a wooden pillar, completely on fire, just burning away. Which that scene and one of the earlier scenes meant that this film, one of the reasons I think maybe why it wasn't so well known, especially over here, is this was one of the first films to be classed as a video nasty in the UK and therefore wasn't really available.
What is a video nasty?
Oh,
please enlighten. Please. I still come across things occasionally, despite being here 16 years, where I'm like, I don't know this term. Teach me.
Yeah.
Teach me the way.
Basically, there was a thing in the 80s where the British censorship, whatever they were, I can't remember the name, the BFC or whatever it is. Basically, they're the ones who do all the ratings on films. And there was a whole load of horror films that they banned, basically. They classed them as video nasties. That's what all the papers called them.
I love that.
Video nasties. Yeah, and they weren't available over here. There was quite a few films. Or films, some films to be shown over here or be available to buy over here had to be quite heavily edited and cut. So yeah, this was one of them. Because obviously it was quite gory and quite graphic in its kill depictions, and obviously it was 81 when it came out, so yeah, it was definitely one of those put in the video nasty category.
Well, I can see that. Well, I don't know how popular it was in the States. I have certainly heard of this film, but I just never watched it. So well, so how many gardening shears did you give it?
4.
Same. I gave it 4. I thought you might have gone lower, but I just feel like it's such a solid, like obviously problematic, and we will talk about it in a second, but I think it's just a really solid film. I cared about the campers, the characters were developed well. I, you know, the guy was Cropsy was scary. I just solid 4 for me.
It made me jump. Like I said, I remembered most of the characters. Okay, I might get their names confused, but you know, I cared more about them. The dialogue was better. I actually, as a standalone film, I prefer this to Friday the 13th.
100% agree.
Yeah.
Much prefer it.
Yeah.
And I think, because Dave asked me to read he said 3.25 hedging shears. He said, not enough bad 80s style gore. Had a strong start, but I got hungry and checked out.
So what we're getting from these is that we just need to make sure we have plenty of snacks.
I guess so. Dave just cracks me up. But I mean, yeah, for me, I rated it higher than 3.25. I really enjoyed it. And I would if anyone hasn't seen it out there, I would definitely recommend it. It's worth at least one viewing, you know, just to see. And again, like the wine scenes and the male gaze, and a lot of that is a very 80s thing, you know, and things have improved, but you know, you kind of have to take that as part of the just how things were at the time, sadly.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the one good thing I like about it is, yes, obviously we have the sex worker being, you know, killed, which is, it's just horrible. And then we have the really uncomfortable scene with Sally in the water where she's basically being punished for not having sex, you know, even before she gets killed, the way Eddie's reaction, you know, telling her to fuck off.
Oh, it's horrible. And then also like Sally being spied on. I mean,
that's you've got Alfred like creeping on the girls and things like that. So yeah, it is very, there is a lot of ick factor to this, but like apart, well, I suppose even in a way, even Alfred's punished a bit. You know, Cropsy gets his hands on him. You know, Glazer gets killed. Eddie gets killed. So I suppose there is some retribution for being
a shitty human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoy it.
I did too. Yeah, good recommendation. So thanks for that. Yeah, glad I watched it.
And as always, Tom Savini working his special effects magic.
Oh, for sure. And when you did eventually see Cropsy, I mean, for me, yeah, scary. It was scary.
Yeah,
he was scary.
I know that he wasn't very happy because he only had like 2 days to come up and make the Cropsy mask.
Mm.
And I think he did a very good job because that thing is, it's monstrous.
I didn't even think it was a mask. I would have thought it was like prosthetics that they put on his face and stuff like that. So that's interesting that it was a mask. But yeah, great effects, definitely. I don't know. I mean, gore to me, it's like finding the right balance. You either go Sam Raimi levels of like camp gore, or you go really, really minimal because it's not necessary to the plot. And somewhere in between, there's like a sweet spot, you know? And for me, this film kind of hit it. I don't need shit tons of gore and blood flying everywhere. I don't mind it, you know, necessarily, but it's not required for me to feel afraid. So I feel like this film had it. It did have it, but just it wasn't over the top, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good film.
So yeah, 80 Summer Slasher series continues next week. I'm here for it. A few weeks still to go. So yes. Join us. Bring your sleeping bags. So. Bring your cute underwear. But no but no bras, obviously. Pillows for the pillow fight. Contraband.
We need all the contraband.
Yeah.
I think we need snacks.
Booze, obviously snacks. Well, clearly for us. Booze stolen from your parents. Maybe weed from your neighbor. There you go.
Yeah.
All the things. So
all the things are needed.
Yeah. Join us at next week's sleepover session.
Sleepover session.
You're all invited. It's a party in my pants.
Slumber party.
Slumber
in my pants.
Yeah. And as always, please rate us, like us, talk to us. We love you.
Subscribe, follow, rate, review, dance around on the street with, you know, screaming how amazing we are.
Send kisses.
Send us interpretive dance renditions of our episodes.
My favorite. I would love
that. We would love that.
All right. Well.
And until next time.
Brothers Keg, take us out.
Bye.